Patibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Ambatvamani Santatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. Okay, so we are on chapter 16, verse 17. Atma Atma sambhavitasta dhaha dhanamana madanvitaha dhanaman madanvitaha yajante nama yajnaiste yajante nama yajnaiste dambena vidipurvakam dambena vidipurvakam sorry vidipurvakam vidipurvakam Atma sambhavitaha stabdaha dhana mana madha anvitaha yajante nama yajnaihi te dambena avidhi purvakam. So continuing on with the nature of the asuras, of the rakshasas, right?
Are these the asuras or rakshasas?
The asuras and rakshasas are grouped together.
Okay.
Rakshasas are more rajasic, asuras are more tamasic. So rakshasas are actually scarier because they have a lot of energy, a lot of anger. And the asuras are more dull. But all of them have a lack any type of viveka in reference to dharma and adharma. The discrimination between dharma and adharma is lacking. What's really important for them really is kama, desire, their own desires. And then they have a value for krodha, anger. It's not just that they get angry and they want to calm their anger, they feel justified in their anger. And they use their anger as almost as a weapon. You know, to manipulate and to control. So here, continuing on, Atma means the self. Sambhavita means to have a very high opinion, you know, to be have a great deal of respect, very high opinion of yourself. And so the very self-involved and feeling worshipful of their own. Of their own self. So Atma Sambhavitaha. Then Stabdaha. Stabdaha means really arrogant.
Arrogant.
It was one conceited. Mm-hmm. Arrogant, proud. All of these words, some of these words are very similar, so you try to make little distinctions between them.
Mm-hmm.
So stabdaha here can be like conceited and self-involved, arrogant. Dana means wealth.
Mm-hmm.
Mana means that arrogance or pride. The mana, remember the amanitvam and adambitvam in the chapter 13?
Mm-hmm.
The manitvam means where you are kind of flaunting qualities that you really do have. The adambitvam are where you're kind of flaunting qualities that you don't have in order to gain that type of self-respect from others. So here, the dana, wealth, you have mana, dana mana, means that you are flaunting your wealth. You're name-dropping your wealth, right?
Mm.
So that others will respect you. And also the madha is that you yourself have a tremendous amount of pride around your wealth. So mana means you're dropping, mm-hmm. you're making sure that everybody knows how wealthy you are, so that they will respect you. But you also, this mudda means you also have a great value for your wealth, right? Mm-hmm. And you're very proud of it. So you're very proud of it yourself, and you want others to be proud of it too. So this anvitaha, this last word, so you've got dana, mana, mudda, anvitaha. Anvitaha means, for anvita means that you possess something, you're connected with something, or something, or this is even stronger for anvitaha, this is inherent in you. So these are you. So here we use anvitaha. This is really, these values are very ingrained in you. They're not superficial values. This is really truly how you feel. That's what's so kind of embarrassing about them. In the sense that, say, you have these values and there's no one underneath that objectifies those values and has and comments on them, mm-hmm. as though this is silly or this is not the way I want to be, or so that person's not there. Mm-hmm. So that anvitaha can be these are what just inherently how you are. There's nobody inside who's criticizing or questioning those values. So the one who is committed to them. So dana, mana, medha, anvitaha. So that person, totally taken with yourself, where you have very self-involved and taken with yourself, the atma sambhavitaha, staddaha, that certain type of conceit, and then being totally flaunting your wealth and also very much taken with your own denim as well, mm-hmm. then such people, these are all in the nominative plural, so they're talking about asuras, these qualities of these asuras. These such people, they yajante. Yaj means to worship or to honor or also to perform a ritual, okay? But when you say yaj, it means to spread out a ritual, to do a sacrifice or to worship in a particular way. And that's why sometimes when we say yaj, we just say to perform a ritual. Mm. But then in a sentence, it'll always have the word ritual with it. Mm. You know. So here, they perform a ritual, nama yajnyahi, with names only a ritual, a yajna. So they are worshiping by means of yajnas. Yajnas are the rituals, mm-hmm. which are only by name, nama. They're performing these rituals only as though. They're calling the rituals. They're rituals in name only, no, not really doing it. So how is that? So the te means they. They are performing these rituals owned by name only. Dambena. Dambena is hypocrisy. They're with hypocrisy because they have what's meant here. They're performing these rituals. Let's go to the next one first. Aviddhi purvakam. Aviddhi purvakam means not associated with viddhi. In the Vedas, there are things which are enjoined. Those are called viddhis. The rules, the way certain rules that are be followed, or in a ritual, there's very specific instructions on how a ritual is to be done. Those are all the viddhis. Also the dharma, those things are called viddhis. They're injunctions, the ways this is to be done. Okay? So in the performance of a ritual, there are many viddhis. There are also nishedas. Nishedas are the things not to be done. So here in this sense, when they're doing the ritual, this is aviddhi purvakam. Means the viddhis aren't followed at all. They're not associated with the viddhis. So you're just doing a ritual. Then when you say dambena, as a hypocrite, you're doing the ritual, but you have no shraddha. Mm. So you're doing the ritual, there's no shraddha there at all. So why are you doing the ritual? Mm-hmm. That hypocrisy also is you're using something for a personal gain, to gain something else. And here the something else would be, because the rituals and these things, some rituals take a tremendous amount of money, and they're big spreads, and you can do it to show your own wealth and to show your own religiosity and all that. But if there's no shraddha there, if you're not following the viddhis, then it's just total hypocrisy. Mm. You know? It's for the gain of something else. You're doing it for the gain of something else. Like maybe you want people to think you're a very religious person, or there's also a lot of danam, there's a lot of giving to the Brahmins and to different people as you're doing the rituals. Maybe you want to be seen as a very generous person, a very kind person, a very good person. That's what you want. It has nothing to do. And why do you want it? Well, because you want to be respected by these people, or to be looked at as a big person, whatever. But it's all dumbo. Dumbo means it's all hypocrisy. It doesn't have anything to do with shraddha. Shraddha means, that means where, when you're, for instance, in Vedanta, say when you're listening to the Vedanta, to the Upanishad, there's a certain shraddha. The shraddha is there's a mind that's committed to understanding. There's a commitment there. There's something in your mind that says, this is true, I want to understand it. You know without knowing. So there's a shraddha there. It's like a faith pending understanding. In the Vedas, when we talk the first portion of the Vedas, and we say shraddha, you've been born into that Vedic culture, or you've adopted that Vedic culture because of prior samskaras, whatever reason. There's a shraddha. If you're doing a ritual, it's because that you have shraddha in that ritual. If you're doing prayers, it's because you have shraddha in those prayers. They mean something to you. They're sacred. They're important, you know? What if you're doing the rituals and the prayers because you want somebody else to see you do the rituals and prayers? It has nothing to do with shraddha. It has nothing to do with dharma. It has nothing to do with anything other than making an impression on somebody else, and that becomes a hypocrisy. So
a show or a performance.
What?
It's like a show or a performance.
Yes, yeah. For doing it for a reason other than what the ritual is for.
It's meant for,
yeah. It's hypocrisy. So very self-involved, conceited people who make a big show of their wealth, and that's where all of their self-worth is located also. That's the madha. And they want other people, they want to splash it around to other people so that other people will respect it, but that's where your value system is also, is in the wealth. And so that hypocrisy, let's go on to the next one. So, ahankaram balam darpam, ahankaram balam darpam, kaman krodhan cha samshritaha, kaman krodhan cha samshritaha, mamatma paradeheshu, mamatma paradeheshu, pradvishanto bhyasuyakaha, pradvishanto bhyasuyakaha. Ahankara, ahankaram, balam, darpam, kamam, krodham, cha, samshritaha, mam, atma, pada, deheshu, pradvishantaha, abhyasuyakaha. So this is the verse 18 and 19 are going to go together. So there's not going to be a verb in this verse, but let's just go through each one of these. Ahankara means ahankara is the ego. Mm-hmm. Ahankara means you see what Shankara, remember what Shankara says here. You know, it's when yourself, the ahankara, really what the ahankara is, even just in terms of self-knowledge, but the ahankara means literally, it's just the I notion. What that means is that you're the self that you are, even the self that you know yourself to be, just your me, this conscious being that you are, and is you, in fact, is totally identified with the body, mind, sense organs. Right? Totally. And even though that's not true, even though the physical body is totally objectified by you, your thoughts are objectified, their subject-object relationship, all of these things come and go in your experience. You know, they're not, they're, you are the constant. You are the things that you're aware of are not constant. You don't even walk around saying, I'm the body, I'm the body, I'm the body. You don't walk around being aware of the body all the time, even. Mm. You know, what about when you're reading a book or you're involved in a conversation? You know, the focus is not on the body. What about in dream? Focus is not on the body. So there's only one, there's only the, but the thing to understand is no matter what the focus is on, and that is varying and coming and going continually, the one invariable is you. You are the invariable presence in every experience that you have. But from the standpoint of the mind takes you to be it. Because whatever thought you have, I am there. You can't have a thought without me. Mm-hmm. So the mind can say, I am me. Because it never has it never is without me. And so why shouldn't it say, I am me? And here I am in this body. Right?
So the mind is pretending it's the self.
It's not pretending, it believes that, you see, this is the whole thing. This is Vedanta, Satyam Mitya. What that means is, for this Satyam, it's a type of relationship, it's a relationship of a non-relationship. Like if I say, what is the relationship between clay and a pot? A clay pot. What is the relationship between clay and the pot? Yeah, but there's a pot. But really, there's only clay. So the satyam is what is actually there, which is the clay. That's satyam. The pot is what Swamiji calls an incidental attribute. Right? It's not really, there's only clay there. That's all. Zero, nothing else. But there's this incidental attribute that we call pot. And we could make this incidental attribute pot. When we say incidental attribute, we mean it brings about no change whatsoever to what is satyam. Mm-hmm. Zero. There is only non-dual clay there. But maya, this maya, if the pot says, I am clay, that's true, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's true. It is clay. There's nothing there but clay. But from the standpoint of clay, the clay just says, I'm clay. Mm-hmm. You know? From the standpoint of clay, where's the pot? There's only clay there. But the pot will say, I am the clay, and it's true, but the clay will say, there's only me here. Right? So now your mind says, I am the self. Right? It's true. There is no distance whatsoever between the mind and the self, like there's no distance between the pot and the clay. So the mind, of course, says, I am the conscious being. And then that thought goes, the next thought comes, conscious being, conscious being, conscious being, because what is actually there is me, conscious being. But conscious being, me, this very personal me that is me, from its own standpoint, there's only me. You know? There's nothing else. And I'm not this thought or this thought or this thought or this thought. I simply am. But from the standpoint of Maya, everything is only conscious being. So the Maya takes on conscious being to belong to be itself. It's true in a way, but it's only half true. It is the self, but the self is totally free of it. That's the satya-mitya relationship. And so here at the ahankara, that sense of me, right, is totally identified with the body-mind sense organs. Of course it is, you know. But that ego is very, very strong, you know, where I am here, you know. The ahankara is very strong, and it's very much attached to any gunas, any good qualities that I may have, or any good qualities that I think are good qualities. In fact, Shankara jokes and says, you know, that by the good people, they won't necessarily see that as a good quality, and some it is, but you yourself see it as a good quality. You see your strength, you see your will, you know, you see you came from a good family. All of these things have to do with ahankara, but they're very important to you, and you judge yourself accordingly as being an important person. Okay, so ahankara is strong. Then And he talks about, Shankar talks about this mutual superimposition that I was just talking about. Then Balam also, so that person has a strong sense of self. I am an important, I am here and I'm an important person. And they're Balam. They have a strong personality. So you've probably experienced this. It's a strong personality that is very willing to bully. To bully and to push around. Because ahankara, they feel very self-justified, very, very self-justified, and they have a strong personality, and they will push you. Darpam means a certain type of insolence, where it's not. They feel indignant and justified to do what they want to do. Mm. So that's darpam.
What?
They feel indignant and justified to do whatever they want to do. They're perfectly fine with breaking any rules. They're the rule makers. Rules are for other people. You know, rules are for other people. But I'm different. You know, I can follow. I make the rules. I don't follow the rules. Mm. That's an insolence. Kamam, again, is the desire. For them, their value, they're run by desire. Krodha is the anger that always follows the desire when it's not being fulfilled. Samshritaha means all these people they are committed to are very much held by or under the sway of all of these. Ahankara, Bala, Darpa, Kama, and Krodha. They're totally committed to or held under the sway of all of these. And so for these type of people, this is here, this whole thing, this is the nominative plural, samshritaha. These people that are held, totally held or committed to, held under the sway of all of these type of qualities, they, pradvishantaha, mom, pradvishantaha, they hate me, Ishwar talking. They hate me, they dislike me. Me who am Atma Paradeheshu, me, the Ishwara, the Brahman, who am abiding there in every body, in your body, in their own body, Atma, and in the bodies of all beings. So it's a way of saying they hate me, the Ishwara, who is really the self of all beings, their very self, and the self of all beings. What he's talking about here is dharma, really. Mm-hmm. They don't follow dharma. Dharma is Ishwara. So the Ishwara is really the truth of all in all beings. It's the very being, it's the very self, and all of the laws, all of the laws that make up the creation, the order of the creation, is something that is the warp and woof of the whole Maya, right? But the whole Maya is filled with one conscious being. That's why we say this Maya is an upadi. The whole creation is an upadi. It's a conditioning adjunct. Like my mind is an upadi. It's a conditioning adjunct for me. The whole creation is a conditioning adjunct for me, the self. So hating me means that, oh, it's like this. If you have an animal, right, that animal has a self. That self is Brahman. That self is Ishwara. You know? And so the way you treat that animal is the way you treat Ishwara. The way you treat a person who is a poor or needing is the way that you treat Ishwara. The way you treat other people is the way you treat Ishwara. The way you treat yourself is the way you treat Ishwara. And so, what if you beat the animal? You're beating Ishwara. What if you steal from a person? You're stealing from Ishwara. What if you're cruel to a person? You're cruel to Ishwara. What if you abuse yourself with drugs and drinking and adharma? You're abusing Ishwara. See what I mean? That's exactly what he's saying. If you hate another person, you're hating me. Because that's what's true. It's what it is. There's only one me here, right? It'd be like saying, you know, if I pound on my knee, the knee, you know, I'm pounding on me, right? If I'm pounding on my knee, I'm pounding on me. Mm-hmm. It's not that the knee is different than me. You know, if I squeeze my finger, I'm hurting my finger, I'm hurting me. What if I don't own the finger? That's ajnanam. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. In fact, we use examples. You use the body as an example because you do have that, what we call dehatma buddhi, because of the sukshma sharira, this whole body, right, is one entity, even though it's made up of countless parts, but we recognize it as one being. And so it would be, we don't want to hurt any part of this one being because it's me. And so if you do want to hurt a part, you're attacking yourself, you're attacking me. This hand is attacking this knee, it's attacking me, right? But the whole this is the creation, though. This is the situation with the whole creation. You have to treat the creation and all beings in the creation like you would treat this. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. And so you're not only being a dharmic to the beings in the creation, you also find yourself being a dharmic to your own body, mind, sense organs, the way that you're treating it, you're destroying it. Mm-hmm. You're destroying your body, you're destroying your mind. By adharma, any adharma doesn't only just hurt the other person, it hurts your own mind. Any cruel act that you do reverberates. It's not like just the other is experiencing the cruel act. Your mind experiences the cruel act too. You know, the two go together. You know, so in hurting the other, you're also destroying yourself. But what he's saying is this pradvishantaha, you know, hating me, you're hating me, mm-hmm. You know. You're inimical to me, who am abiding in, who am in this body, in your body, and in the body of all others also. And abhyasuyakaha is a, Swamiji uses in his translation this word cavalier. I had to look it up, and that's
what there. What does it mean?
Well, it means where you say a person, say there's another person who is a dharmic, a good person, but you're always finding fault. Mm. You're finding fault with people all the time. And making problems where there aren't really problems. Yes, it's a pettiness. Mm-hmm. You're finding fault with others, but also the idea of making problems where there aren't problems. You know, mm-hmm. The troublemaker.
which word is that?
This abhyasuyakaha.
The last one.
Yeah, abhyasuyakaha. The one that Swamiji translates as cavalier.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Do we have any examples of that?
Just think through it. You'll figure
okay,
out.
Okay, okay.
Let's do this. This last half of the verse 19 is a continuation. Tanaham dvishatak kruran. Tanaham dvishatak kruran. Samsareshu naradhaman, samsareshu naradhaman, kshapam yajasram ashubhan, kshapam yajasram ashubhan, asurishweshu yonishu, asurishweva yonishu, Asurishweva yonishu. Tan aham dvishataha kruran samsareshu nara adhaman. Kshipami ajasram ashuban asurishu eva yonishu. What he says is, tan means them, accusative plural, those people. Dvishataha, who are filled with hate, who are hating me. Those people who are dvishataha, hating me, like from the last verse. Kruran, who themselves are cruel. Mm-hmm. Samsarishu, into the samsara, I'll get to that in a minute. Nara adhaman. The low, adama means the lowest of the low. Mm. So neta means men, people, humans. So neta adaman, the lowest of the low among the humans, among men. Kshipami, I throw. So that tan aham, that aham, I place or I cast or I throw these people who are cruel, who are hating me in all beings. Nera adaman, who are the lowest of the low. Ashuban, who, ashuban means impure.
Mm.
Who are impure. I throw them, I cast them into samsara. Ajasram, perpetually, again and again and again. And throwing them into samsara means by their karma. They go again, perpetually, again and again and again, into this trance, taking birth after birth. That's what they mean by samsara. Birth after birth after birth. And what? Asurishu eva yonishu. In the wombs of asuras. Again and again, they'll be born into the asura families, asuric families. Because their karmas warrant that. They're who they are. You know, the thrust of their karma pushes them again and again into the wombs of asuras. Because that's who they are. Now, to understand that, you have to kind of get a feel for reincarnation, what they mean by the transmigration of the jiva. So say you're given a birth. And the birth that you take, this birth with your parents and the culture and the time and everything, your interest, the upadhi that you have. All of that is really a continuation, in a sense, of your last life. So the next birth that you'll take is in direct relationship to the trajectory of the last life. Who you were at the end of your life is the one who continues on. And so you will take a body and find yourself in a situation according to that karma. Just like today brings tomorrow, you know, the next day and the next day. 1 month brings the next month. This life brings the next life, brings the next. So it's like a continuous thread. And so, say, the life that you've lived this time is just developing asuric tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Is the life of an asura. Then you will be born into a family of asuras. And you're going to have to work your way out. Right? Yeah. And people do work their way out.
Mm-hmm.
Say you're born into a very adharmic family, but for whatever reason, whatever Bhagavan's grace, you get out of it. You don't keep the same values as your parents. I mean, my parents were Republican. I'm a Democrat. Yeah. We're different, you know. It's not that you can't change, but you will reap the results of your actions,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so what he says again and again, because the papa is so much, and you're self-justified, and you're proud of yourself, you feel self-righteous in your papa, in your adharma, you know. And so you will be thrown back and back and back into the adharma. And as we'll see, the next verse actually, even worse. It's not that you necessarily will get a human birth. You know, that's something, at least in the East, how they look at reincarnation or transmigration. It's not just an uphill evolution. where you said, oh, now I'm a human, but before I was an ape, and before that I was something less and less and less, and a fish, and then an amoeba, and you've slowly evolved. That's the physical evolution of the physical upadi. Mm-hmm. The jiva does not evolve like that. Your getting a better life or a lesser life or whatever is dependent upon punya and karma. Punya and papa. It's dependent upon dharma. And so you could have had many lives of illustrious lives and devata bodies and then kind of fallen from grace, you know, because of greed.
Fallen
from grace in the sense of fallen from your dharmic life. You know, because of kama, really. Mm-hmm. It's because of desire, you know, and krodha and greed, you know. And then when you get totally overwhelmed with kama, with desire, that becomes lobha, it becomes greed, a wanting more and more. And that becomes more dominant, more important to you. That's where your values are. Then you get kind of lost, pulled out here into samsara. And you can get on that type of trajectory. So now you're on the downhill slope in terms of papa. Mm. I'm saying downhill means dukkha. Uphill means sukha, right? Mm. Downhill is papa. Uphill is, if I want to use that metaphor, uphill is sukha, is punya. You know, I'm more comfortable with punya. I'm more comfortable with sukha. I'm more comfortable with shanti, mm-hmm. you know. But I can be following dharma and gaining the fruits of that, even not talking about a mumukshu, gaining the fruits of that with a life that has shanti, you know. It has a certain level of security, it has a certain level of enough desires satisfied. It's a, you know, a more comfortable life. I can have a very uncomfortable life too. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I can take a life where I can have a life where I'm actually taking an animal body. Because say for instance, if I'm a very cruel person, then I can take a body in which an animal body in which that type of cruelty, you know, is not considered cruelty in that body. Mm. Like if you're born like into like a hyena, or you're born as a tiger, or you're born as a one like a carnivore.
Sure.
Or yeah. Where that is their nature. Right? From a shark, they're not considering themselves cruel at all. Those words don't apply. You don't say a tiger is cruel. A tiger is a tiger. Mm-hmm. You know, but the way that they live, so say you as a human body, you're viewed as very vicious, as very cruel. Well, that type of behavior really doesn't belong in a human body. Mm-hmm. It belongs in a tiger body or a hyena body. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Oh, I see, yeah.
And then that's its swarupa. That's what's mm-hmm. natural to it. Mm-hmm. And so you'll be taking these kind of bodies because these are the tendencies you have, so let them play out in the arena where they belong. In this arena, they didn't belong there. Right? And so you take even lower, because those animal bodies were animal bodies, they don't have full capacity in some respects. They don't have full capacity in terms of the buddhi. You know?
But they have Brahman.
Well, everybody's Brahman. There's only Brahman. So anyway, that's what he's saying. So these, and it makes sense also if what you have to do is try to understand, you can understand all of this just within this one life and take these, one adharma leads to another adharma leads to another adharma, and adharma itself leads to naraka. Naraka means pain. It means hell if we're looking at the seven worlds up and seven worlds down. But it also means suffering. It means dukkha. It means pain. You know. And so you can find yourself on a trajectory that's spinning downward, more and more and more pain. And somehow you have to hit bottom. and then you have to drag yourself out of that muck. You know? And so you can go through many iterations of muckiness before you finally start crawling, you know, getting yourself back out of it until you get to more of a sattvic mind. You know? But that's not always easy. You know, say some people who have, it takes a lot of work. If you get down too low, you know, if you get down too low, it takes a lot of work to get out. You know, if you have a value, say some of these, we have to remember that when we look at an asura or a rakshasa is much, much different than a dharmi, somebody who's ruled by dharma. Because if you're ruled by dharma, you can have every single one of these qualities that they're talking about. But there's somebody behind. That is the difference. There's somebody behind who is working on themselves, who doesn't value those qualities. You know, and so it becomes a sadhana. These qualities become something that I'm working on, that I'm neutralizing, that I'm outgrowing. So that person's that's the daiva. Those are that means that the qualities that person values are the whole first portion of qualities that he went through. You know, those are what you hold as having you hold in your heart. That's what you have you esteem, those ones, not these. But the asura will actually scoff at those. Those qualities are weak. Yeah. And there's nobody inside judging. That's what makes a person a rakshasa or an asura.
Mm.
Otherwise, you're working on these qualities, neutralizing them. That's fine. There's no problem. See, that? I mean, it's a huge difference, yeah. Really. Because that's why he had to talk to Arjuna and say, don't worry. You know?
Yeah.
Don't worry. Because you see yourself. And you see all these things. Oh, I can see that, and you should be able to see all of them, you know, in this way or that way, or you know, you can find them or find instances of them. But the one who's finding them is not them.
Mm-hmm.
So what if there's not one who's finding them?
Yeah,
that's the thing. That's a hard place. So when you're in that place, then something has to happen to give you space between yourself or your buddhi and that quality.
Mm-hmm.
Something has to happen where you get some space. And when you get the space that allows you to objectify that quality and not value it, then you're starting on the way back up of this roller coaster ride. So, but it's not easy. You know, that's why time and time again, because you don't have that space, you've lost that space. So then time and time again, perpetually you're taking birth after birth after birth in these asuric wombs, in these asuric bodies. And then, let's do this one last verse here, because it continues on. It says, Asurim yonim apannaha Asurim yonim apannaha Muda janmani janmani Muda janmani janmani Mama prapyaiva kanteya Mama prapyaiva kanteya Tato yanta dhamam gatim Tato yanta dhamam gatim Asurim yonim apannaha Mudaha, janmani, janmani, mam aprapya eva kaunteya, tataha yanti adamam gatim. He says, these people so mudaha, so deluded, deluded in terms of dharma and adharma, no viveka, no discrimination between dharma and adharma, and so making terrible choices. So if these people, having gained these asurim yonis, having gained wombs,
mm-hmm.
which belong to asuras,
mm-hmm.
the wombs of asuras, having gained these wombs, birth after birth, janmani janmani, that means birth, birth. In birth after birth, mom apropya, Eva, having not gained me, he kaunteya, means having not gained me, means there's no dharma nishta there. There's no nishta in dharma. I'm not even there for them. You know? And so their whole focus is external into Maya, really. There's no relationship with me as Ishwara. There's no relationship with Dharma. There's no recognition of me. There's no mumukshutvam, but there's also no wanting to go to Swargaloka. Because there's no care for that. So having not gained me, he kaunteya, so that's a name for Arjuna, the son of Kunti, having not gained me, therefore yanti adhamam gatim, they go to an even lower gati, means animal gatis, animal. Won't even take a human body. They have to take a body, which will allow them to express what they are. But you know what's interesting there is, say they were to take the body, I mean, there are many different types of animals. Maybe what if they took the body of a worm, one of these worms that they don't have any eyes or anything, they live deep under the ground, you know, and that's all they do, they dig tunnels under the ground. They're very weird looking creatures. But that's what they do, that's who they are. And so it's a perfect, that's an expression, right? They're not weird to themselves. Right. That's what they do. If you take tigers are beautiful. These are beautiful, wonderful animals. Yeah, but their life is hard. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's also very violent. Very violent life. But they're beautiful, beautiful animals. They're not adharmic animals. They are doing their dharma. But this type of person maybe would fit in that body better. You see what I mean? It's really interesting. It's very interesting. What about all the mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what I was thinking is, you know, this one word made me think of Yasuya Kaha, the people who are just nitpicking all of the time.
Mm.
You know, even the good people, they just see what's bad.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Always seeing what is, always making a fault out of everything, you know. Always something you could do better.
This is where you didn't quite get it right.
Yeah.
You didn't quite get it right here.
And you're also a good person, all right, but, you know, they really have this and that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to be a good person, but, you know, really they're not because they have this and that.
Mm-hmm.
So that gossip also. So we all have some of that. That gossip is set in. It's very, very rewarding to get rid of. To the degree you get rid of gossip, to the degree you have some more shanti inside. Okay, so that's enough of these. Now, guess what? We have 1, 2, 3, 4 verses left.
Well, we can do those in one class.
Yeah, we're doing them in one class.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then we can move on.
You should keep, but you know what? You should, not should, but you have Swamiji's notes on these. It's really worthwhile to...
Just read it.
Yeah, spend some time on it.
It's kind of like a novel.
Yeah, just to... You know, it's so interesting because even the Mahabharata and the Ramayana and all these itihasas, these epics and things, they're always playing these two forces,
mm-hmm.
the asuras, the rakshasas, and the devas. And they're just personifying all of these qualities into kind of good and evil, the good guys and the bad guys,
mm-hmm.
you know. But what's so funny is that you see this playing out in the universe also. Over and over and over and over again, the world divides up into these forces.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all of these forces inside of ourselves also, but for a person who's sattvic, you know, what is dominant in the value system are the daivam forces. That's what's dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And the asuric and rakshasa forces are held at bay, and they're not valued. In fact, they're suppressed.
Right.
You know, it's not that they don't exist, but they're suppressed. They're not fed. You know, the daivic forces for daivam are the ones that we feed. The others are left to starve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a beautiful story about that. Which one? If you have two wolves, it's an ancient story, you know? Mm-hmm. You have two, there's two wolves. You know, one of the wolves is dark and vicious. And the other wolf is gentle, you know? And so which of these two wolves are they both going to survive, or which one is going to survive?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, well, the one that will survive is the one you feed. Right? I mean, that's
right.
So simple. The one you feed. I'll find that. Somebody gave me that. It's a beautiful story. Should we take a moment? Do swasti pajaka. Om swasti pajabhya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane vyashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukino bhavantu. Kale varshatu parajanyaha prithivi sasya shalini desho yamsho barahitaha brahmana santu nirbhayaha om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha sarve santu niramayaha sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityor ma amritam gamaya om purnamadav purnamidam purnat purnamudachate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate om shanti shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Harihi Om. How's the sound, Michael? Can you hear? And I hope you're all hearing. Let me know if you hear what I'm saying right now. Can you give me a message? Oh, good. Great.
Oh.
Gosh. Oh, all right.
It's a winner.
Okay, thanks so much. I wonder if the Mac people can hear. Are any of you on Mac? Or are you all... Anybody on the Mac? Oh, good. All right. Great. We're still going to go. We're still moving.
Yeah, we still need to move on.
Yeah. Small question is, it's relative to this, but it's not exactly. Maybe it is.
Come in, Tibbs.
Tibby.
Go ahead.
Oh, Tibbeth.
Hi.
Pretty girl. Oh, pretty Tibby.
It's okay.
Oh, she's wet.
It was drizzling outside.
I think she's wet. Miss,
oh, sure, yeah. Go,
I'll ask my question when I can.
Oh, Tibbeth.
Do you want to get dried off? She's not wet, but I'll pretend.
You do pretty much to pretend. She comes from outside and it's raining. She needs to be dry. Never mind. The animal world.
So is this why sometimes, you know, you can wonder why beautiful children are put into these horrible situations, like parents that don't pay attention to them or, you know, off doing things that they shouldn't be doing. And the kid ends up being almost like the parent to the parents.
Yeah, I mean, karma's... We can look at our own life in terms of karma because you know the kind of the insides up, but you still don't know the answers to it because it's so complicated.
Yeah.
You know, there's just so many threads coming to give you the particular situation that you have, and it's going to be 50-50 of Punya and Papa to take a human birth.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be things that are extremely challenging.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at your life, for all of us, I don't know if I've told the story here, but you could say if you got a piece of paper and you divide it in half,
mm-hmm.
long ones, on one side you can write this fairy tale
mm-hmm.
of a life, and on the other it is a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sure.
And the thing is, everybody's challenges are real. The crosses that you have to bear are real, and they're hard. They're not pretend.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of little things that you can just brush off, but I'm talking about no, there are things that are hard.
You know? Nobody's free of that.
No. And there are things that are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, it depends on... So that's going to be true for this birth. And that's part of the challenge of this birth. And also allows you a chance to become a mumukshu.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And to try to figure things out. Because there's so much... It's sukha-dukha. There's nothing stable here. You know, and what if there's nothing stable here, but you're just always happy? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a swargaloka as you, which is only like a going to a spa, vacation spa,
mm-hmm.
for a short period of time, but everything is going your way all the time. As you want it, so it happens. As you want it, so it happens. You don't have time for any dukkha,
because
mm-hmm. your desire is continually being fulfilled. So it's just like going and getting a massage or something. It's a vacation. But here it's not like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so it's challenging. It's interesting because it's like the game of life, but the game of life is real,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And so then how do we grow and become, do we get crushed or do we, how do we handle the difficult things that are thrown our way?
Well, do we get a chance to choose whether we're on the side that bears the cross, or the side that has good events?
No. You have free will, right? You have you're given a life here, based upon your prior karma.
Mm-hmm.
But that life isn't going to just be punya; it's going to be a mix.
And then what happens?
And then you live it. And then how do you negotiate that?
Mm.
You know? What do you learn from your life? And how do you handle the difficult things that have been thrown your way?
Mm.
You know? And the ones that you can't handle, that you so-called fail at, it's okay, you'll be given another opportunity.
That's the scary part, you have another opportunity.
Oh, no.
But I mean, even in this life itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, in this life itself, if there's something, it's... I always use the example of if you've decided to buy a new car, and say you're going to buy a Volvo, you decide, I'm on a Volvo. Then when you're driving around, you see Volvos everywhere,
mm-hmm.
right? But if you don't want to, haven't thought about a Volvo, you don't notice them. And so with your challenges, the weaknesses you have that you're working on, I'll say one person is always causing you a lot of trouble, you know? And that person finally goes, but what happens? The same person type comes
right,
again
right.
and again and again, because all of the problems are everywhere. It's just like germs. All germs are everywhere. But if you have a weakness, you'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing like that. So until you really overcome that particular weakness, you know, you'll see it everywhere. You have so many opportunities to deal with it. It's just incredible.
Does it really work that way? I mean, I just see vulvas or weakness everywhere.
No, you won't. If you're looking for a vulva,
yeah,
because you want one, you'll see them everywhere. But what if a vulva's not on your mind? Then they're there, but you don't notice them.
Yeah, I haven't seen one in years.
Yeah, so that's if there's something that bugs you.
Yeah.
Then wherever that's occurring, you'll see it. Because you have a relationship with it. And so it's like it sniffs you out or you sniff it out.
Right, right.
You
know? Yeah.
But there's a time when you outgrow that.
Yeah.
And then you don't see it anymore, you don't notice it anymore because it's not an issue for
right.
you. You know?
Yeah.
That's growth. It's really kind of neat.
I was
you know?
Telling David something. There's, I don't know why this is, there's a neighbor that we have that I don't know why, but when I see him, there was this constant, like, just this little irritation, you know? And it was like, what is it about this person that gives me that little irritation?
Yeah.
You know? And he's a perfectly fine gentleman. I don't know him.
Yeah.
But yet, just upon seeing him, there's this, you know, irritation that happens. And finally, I was like, okay, well, it's not about him. It's obviously something about me. You know, so he's
yeah.
bringing out something in me.
Yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
I'm responding. He's just fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's
exactly.
nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
So, and finally, when I realized that, I was like, okay, I could let it go. But
yeah.
it was, you know, I mean, it's been years that this little irritant has been happening. It's like, well, why?
You know, that's so neat. So that's the pathway to get rid of it, though. It's like once you realize it, and instead of putting it on the other person, and you are the one, the irritation is there in you, and so you have to go to it
yes.
where it is existing.
Yes.
And stop that projection. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
By going to it, then you can talk to it even.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is this really
yeah,
about?
What are you doing?
Yeah. Why are you bothered?
Just stop it.
Yeah, what is it? Hey, what's that about, Michael? I can hear I'm on a Mac. Oh, you mean Tibby. Oh, good. You can even... Yeah, Tibby.
She,
I don't, yeah.
She heard Tibby? He heard Tibby?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tibby, it's kind of raining outside, so she thought she was wet.
And she wasn't.
She wasn't wet, but she thought she was wet.
It was a projection.
She's like the neighbor.
So Edward went and dried her off. She's fine now.
But, you know, the question, I don't know why this image came to me during the class, but after this battle's over and Krishna, Arjuna defeats the other side, and then is it Yudhishthira from Arjuna's side?
Yudhishthira, yeah.
He goes over, and after they've killed all these other people, and there's Bhishma there.
Yeah.
Full of arrows.
Right.
And bleeding.
Yeah.
And then Bhishma tells Yudhishthira, the 1,000 names of Vishnu.
Yeah.
Well, where if you're seeing the sacred in all beings in to reflect at the end of this war, how is that assimilated when you see the damage? Here's Bhishma bleeding to death and telling you sacred things. And your arrow is the one that pierced his heart, you know? That kind of stuff. Or is it too late? She asked the too late
it's
look.
It's too late.
Yeah, okay.
No, it's
okay.
I can handle it.
I have a similar comment or question or thought, you know, about cruel people and comparing, like, making reference then to, like, a tiger, right? But cool people are being just as natural as a tiger is being natural. Cruel people are acting out of ignorance.
You can say like that.
And they have a capacity for cruelty.
Yeah.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
They don't know any better. They're doing the best that they can.
I don't know.
But they're suffering.
There's a difference between an animal, at least the way that it's viewed, let's say, where they are working off of instincts, not off of dharma, adharma.
Mm.
But we have viveka, and we have choice, free will, to do dharma and adharma. Dharma should be something that is natural to you, in the sense that it's almost innate to for you to know that if you don't want to be hurt, another doesn't want to be hurt. If you don't want to be somebody to steal from you, then you shouldn't steal from another person. That should be an innate, right? And so then you get into particular dharmas that are culture and all of that, but this ahimsa, non-injury, do unto others as you would have done unto, this is something that you should be able to figure out, right? Animals don't have to figure out all of that. They're instinctual, they're free from that. But you have free will and you have choice. And you choose to knock off another person for your own benefit. That's a slippery slope. That's an adharma. And you should be capable of figuring out that that's not right. It's not so much, it's not the same type of ignorance. You know, as say you don't know how to play chess or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is something that's innate to you. If you don't want it done to you, why do you think it would be all right to do it to the other person? See what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so
that free will, we don't give free will to animals. They have a lot of freedom and whatnot, but they don't think like that. They're instinctual.
You never got around to my question a long while back about free will versus not free will.
So
that's something that I still haven't really... I haven't figured out what's the reality of what's in play.
Yeah.
Versus, free will versus Ishwar is just being Ishwar.
Yeah.
You know, cruel people are just being cruel people. It's Ishwar.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, but then you're not giving any free will to the jiva. And the Shastra itself, the same Shastra that talks about Ishwara, gives free will to the jiva. But I'll show you that it's complex.
Mm-hmm.
Because the free will is always just, must be intertwined with the prarabdha karma. Because the prarabdha karma is the karma that's unfolding, gives the main trajectory of your life. That is happening. And any free will is taking place within that karma. And so it's very difficult to tease the two out. And so what they say is that until a person has self-knowledge, jnana nishta, it means really rootedness in your knowledge, you always go by dharma. You don't say, oh, that's my karma, you know, or that's the prarabdha karma, or that's my free will. You follow dharma.
Mm.
Whereas for a jnani, the thing is, these kama, these desires, they're not really there anymore. You know, because they're not there because the source of the ananda, the mind's already abiding in. So you don't need to fulfill the desire to get that ananda.
Mm.
The example they use is, you know, in India they have these rivers that dry up in the summer. And so what they do is they build the well in the middle of the river because that'll has the most groundwater. So then, of course, when the river's dry, then you go to the well in the middle of the river. But in the winter, when the river's flowing, you wouldn't even consider going to the well. You just go to the river, right?
You're essentially going to the same place anyway, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. But here, like, if the water's already there, you're not going to traipse over to the well. That's the idea. You know, and so the kamas, the desires that come up in you are only going to be prarabdha.
Mm.
So they say the prarabdha.
Because you're not needing.
No, because your mind isn't out there looking anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Let me have this and let me have that.
Mm.
the prarabdha is fine. You already have the prarabdha. That's why they say the prarabdha fulfills itself in three ways. Either anyecha, anyaicha. It's another's desire pulls you into something. They ask you or whatever, they pull you into it. Or something just in the universe happens that pulls you into the situation. Or swecha, your own, it's your own desire. It rises up in you, oh, let me do that. Well, for jnani, if that comes, you'll say, oh, that's interesting. That's the prarabdha. But that's because there's no real reason for a desire to come. And it arises, and it just goes along. You're just in flow with the creation. But until you have knowledge, you don't know if when a desire comes, if that's coming from, oh, the Joneses over here have this, and so I want this, you know. If it has anything to do with you or not, you don't really know. So you just go with it. It's nothing wrong with a desire as long as it is contained within Dharma.
Well, now, this Dharma, if you do something adharmic, well, the dharmic actions produce ashantavritti for you. So that's now, the people that do adharma, can they get ashantavritti out of that adharma? Is that impossible?
I don't think you can really get ashantavritti out of adharma.
Really?
No.
Because they give you the look that they're getting
out of the, you know, if it's a dharma, no, I don't think so. But there's a lot of dharma involved, a dharma and a dharma. A person's not just doing a dharma.
Yeah.
But the dharma is not going to give a shantavritti. You might get an emotional release or something like that. Like say an act of violence, you're getting an emotional release, but I wouldn't call that a shantavritti. You know.
So it really doesn't produce a shantavritti, then?
I don't think so. No. I mean, maybe you take drugs to kind of quiet down your mind, or you take alcohol or something like that, or do something to distract yourself. But I think that those distractions are needed to kind of make a little space for yourself.
Yeah.
Look at your own mind when you do something adharmic or something not quite right, you don't get a shantavritti from it. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know. Just be really aware, because we're all, you know, you do this to make this mistake or make that mistake, and your mind will let you know right away. You know, it's very sensitive to it.
Yeah.
And that's natural to the mind.
So you get feedback, right?
You get feedback.
Just on the spot.
You get feedback. But the more alert you can become to your mind, it's not that your alertness is making you sensitive. That's not what I'm saying. That can also be true. But you just watch how the instrument works. The instrument of your mind works in terms of dharma, adharma, in terms of sukha and dukkha, in terms of shanti. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when your mind is bothering you, you know, you can really sit with it and see what could I be doing differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and talk to it. Why are you hurting like this?
Yeah, that too. But also, sometimes, you know, it takes a while for us to learn things that you think may be okay, or That you could do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
That's not, that's how we grow. We learn. We become bigger. We recognize things. Well, if you become bigger, there was a time when you weren't bigger, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a growth that takes place.
Mm-hmm.
As you, and what I'm saying is that when the mind isn't enjoying shanti, then you have to look at your mind and say, well, what is it?
It's a neighbor.
Yeah, it's a neighbor. You've got to go.
I was thinking the same thing. Now, why is that neighbor?
Go.
Why is that neighbor there? She's got a problem.
Yeah. It's good to do that, to you have to have some courage.
Yeah.
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 Maybe you need to bring your neighbor flowers.
I know.
Or bring them over here. We'll fix them.
Finally, when I decided, you know, it's definitely not the neighbor. It's me. It's bringing out in me. Then it was easy to just see it and just release it and let it go.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. It was like, I don't know what it is about him.
he's just walking irritant.
He doesn't even have to say anything to me. It's just... That's funny.
No.
Well, I've heard somebody say about free will, you know, just a little example, like you have free will to choose an apple or an orange, but if you want to live, you don't have the choice on whether to eat or not. You have to eat. But you can choose whether you have an apple or an orange.
Well, that's true.
That's like your free will.
Yeah.
But if you want to live, you have to eat something.
Right. That's right. Yeah. But see, that doesn't negate free will. Mm-hmm. You have to remember prarabdha and free will are hand in hand. Right? And it's true, like this body, if you want to live, you have to eat. Yeah.
Right.
But you can make a choice not to eat.
That's true.
Right.
Right.
But then you have to be saying, I'm not going to eat because I don't want to live.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
if you want to live, you have to
eat. You have to eat, yeah. But those are just the laws. That's a little different than free will.
Yeah. Okay. This topic...
Otherwise, it's becoming like a, I don't know, magician.
Okay.
Yeah.
This topic of free will, the Vedanta really doesn't handle it too much, does it?
It handles it as much as it handles anything else in samsara, within duality, is to understand its place. Because the mind wants to understand. So we have to understand the questions that we have in terms of duality. We have to understand those things. Right? But in the end, it's belongs to the creation. And the fact is that my being is the truth of the creation. So Vedanta is for liberation, but liberation has... The mind has to be satisfied.
Mm-hmm.
And because to say non-dual or I am all of this, you have to understand all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That has to be true. Your mind has to see it in every area.
And you're not free unless you can say I am all of this.
You're not, no, because otherwise that's dual. Mm-hmm. Then you don't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Vedanta is not just sitting in nirvikalpa samadhi. It's not just being in a non-dual meditative state. That's not really Vedanta. Vedanta is that I am the whole, that I am Ishvara. Yeah. That means that you recognize all this as the truth of your being. You see that.
Okay. Good.
Yeah.
We'll keep working.
Keep trying.
We'll keep that in mind.
Okay, let's call it a night. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're gonna take care of these guys next class, and then more vision, huh?
I hope so. I have to look at number 17.
Yeah, I think
17 goes even on.
Is that the long chapter?
No, 18 is the really long chapter.
Oh,
but. It's long.
Don't miss out on 18. Okay?
Don't worry. We'll just start the Gita over.
That's what I told her.
Every 10 years.
I told you.
I'm still trying to catch up.